RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the November 20th, 2019 edition of the AmeriPort Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and come here on this week's edition of the show. We've got a couple of things to get into. We're going to talk about how this week was the 8th year anniversary of a noble knight in mixed martial arts, Ben Askren announcing his retirement. We'll talk about a couple of questions that we got on Twitter. We're going to kind of start, as we're getting towards the end of the year, start our Fight of the Year, Story of the Year candidates. We're going to rank our most valuable fighters in MMA. We'll give our thoughts on what happened last week in the UFC and Bellator, give a little bit of thoughts on Saturday's Bellator event in Europe, plus going to have three interviews for you. The fighters are going to all be fighting on Friday on UFC Fight Pass. You're going to hear from the Cage Wars light heavyweight champion Modestus Bukauskas, is going to be defending his title. Also, you're going to hear from two men that will be a part of LFA 79, Brandon Royval and Michael Stack. The interview with Brandon Royval was actually done when he was supposed to face Jared Scoggins, but Scoggins had to pull out of the fight due to an injury, and so Nate Williams is now stepping up to take on Brandon for the flyweight title. And this is kind of one of those weeks where me and Daniel are texting yesterday going, so what are we going to talk about? Because there is not a whole hell of a lot going on in MMA, Daniel. But when I was doing some prep for this show, and I was thinking about, you know, what I saw on Saturday night at UFC Sao Paulo, it made me think of Shogun, which also kind of I was thinking about Shogun based on a conversation that I had with James Krause, which will be up on the MMAReport.com later on this week. And I was sitting there going, oh, man, I know it was November when Shogun Henderson happened. And of course, that was a very memorable night in MMA because earlier that night we had the first matchup between Michael Chandler and Eddie Alvarez. And I'm like, holy crap. Yesterday was the 8-year anniversary. And Daniel, I'm scared to ask this question. How old were you when that fight happened?
Yeah, I think I was either 16 or 15 years old, which is scary to think about, even from my perspective, to be like, damn, time has really flown by, and it does not feel like 8 years ago.
I know.
It's crazy to think that, you know, that means Michael Chandler and Eddie Alvarez are old, which is just a weird thought in my brain. Dan Henderson and Shogun Hua were always old, and, you know, Shogun Hua still manages to be successful. We'll talk about those fights later on in the show. But damn, how time flies. But man, that was absolutely a special night, because in one single night, you had the two best fights of that given year. You had one of the best UFC fights of all time, and then what I would call the best Bellator fight of all time. I don't think there's a fight that even comes close to Chandler and Alvarez. And for all that to happen in the same night, I mean, that was absolutely, literally, if you're doing a list of like the best nights in MMA history, that's one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you polled 10 MMA fans and you said, what is the best non-title fight in UFC history, you got to imagine 7, 8, 9, maybe even 10 would say Shogun Hua versus Dan Henderson at UFC 239, you know, is the best non-title fight in UFC history. And it's one of those days in combat sports that, at least for me, is I remember exactly where I was when I watched that fight or those fights. And I was in Appleton, Wisconsin, as the Bucks were playing the Green Bay Packers the next day. And I was sitting in my hotel room, and, you know, and obviously the Bellator fights happened earlier in the night. And, you know, and I think I've told this story. If not, this will be a new story to tell. But I remember over the past, you know, several years, talking to people who were involved with Bellator at that time, and I've had multiple people tell me that they walked out of the Hard Rock there in Hollywood, and they thought, like, this is going to be a game-changing moment for them, because they just had this incredible fight. And not just had an incredible fight, they had a fight where the underdog, the guy that they had been building, went out and beat a noble name. And, you know, and when I put a tweet out about this yesterday, Michael Chandler responded to my tweet saying, that day forever changed my life. And there was somebody else who responded to me, and Brody Armbar, who said, was just saying a few weeks ago, one of the best nights in MMA history. And I know there's these times where, you know, some people will complain when you have a Bellator event and a UFC event on the same night, but that was one of those nights where at the end of the day, the fans were the biggest winners because we got two great fights. And, you know, you think about, and I mean, man, where Shogun is now, and that was kind of, was it tough to watch that fight for you last Saturday?
Oh, it was way tougher to watch the main event than the co-main event last Saturday.
It's just like, you know, you see these guys that, you know, have been around the sport for a long time, and you watch them and you're just like, man.
Well, he's just not the same guy. No. And it's just, yeah, I mean, it's when you think a prime Shogun who should have gone in there with Paul Craig and blitzed him with strikes, but this was him trying to survive a fight by scoring points with the grappling. And yeah, that fight was depressing. And it kind of reminds you that maybe the time is up on this magical late run we've had out of Shogun.
Yeah, I was thinking about this aspect, though. You know, in individual sports, ultimately, it's for the most part, it's up to the athlete to decide when it's over. You know, you think about I was listening to Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson's podcast, Up in Smoke. And I've been kind of catching up, but they probably got 4 or 5 episodes out already. And, you know, because I listen to a lot of NBA podcasts, just a type of podcast I love to listen to. And I want to say it was their second episode, they had J.R. Smith on. And of course, you know, J.R. is trying to get back into the league. And I thought it was kind of interesting that he said, he's like, look, it's their league. If they want me in, they want me in. If not, you know, hey, I still love the game of basketball and I'm going to play basketball every day of my life. But it kind of made me think of, you know, in a sport like combat sports, you know, there's always going to be a promoter out there that wants to bring you in. And I feel like, you know, I ultimately feel like we're going to see Shogun in Ryzen at some point. I just don't see the UFC. I believe he only has one fight left on his current UFC contract. I don't see the UFC after, if it's true that there's only one fight left on his deal, that they continue to be in the Shogun Hua business.
Unless he looks impressive and looks revitalized, which seems incredibly unlikely, I do think UFC will get out of the Shogun Hua business. And you're right. There will always be an opportunity for a payday if you have any semblance of being a star. I mean, a couple weeks from now, from where I'm standing, you only got to go down the street to go pay some money to watch Tito Ortiz fight Alberto Del Rio. So as long as you have any semblance of being a star, you will get paid to fight, whether it be in mixed martial arts or fighting with your bare knuckles. And that's a sad reality. Fortunately, if you go to Ryzen, the competition level is pretty low. And that's the one silver lining, is you're facing guys who aren't particularly good for the most part. Some of those guys at the very top of those food chain are very dangerous. But there's a lot of guys you can go out there, if you're a past your prime veteran, have success with and not sustain too much damage. Now, the real damage will be sustained during training camp, which is also pretty scary. The other thought I had when kind of reflecting back on this night, and it's kind of spurred by you saying, like, the Bellator guys thought this may have been a game changer, which maybe it would have been had that gotten all the spotlight. But I remember when Chandler Alvarez happened and they put it on YouTube and stuff, and I really shared that fight with my friends, because this was back in a time where if there was a bad ass fight, you wanted to share it with your friends and show it, and maybe they would become MMA fans. And I feel like the value of a killer fight of the year candidate has lessened so much. It felt like every time there was a fight of the year, Korean Zombie, Desmond Poirier, going all the way back to Griffin Bonner, it was a big deal, and the two fighters that were in that fight became stars. But in recent years, people who have been a part of fight of the year contenders have not, I don't think, been elevated by those fights. I feel like the oversaturation of MMA has even affected that. When we talk about the fight of the year, it just does not feel like those fights are as big a deal as they used to be, but I still think the quality of those fights are at a high level.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the first thing you think of Bellator at that time, it was an event that aired on MTV2, and how many people truly had access to it. I think it was one of those fights where, you know, Bellator had to put it on YouTube. And I mean, I remember, I mean, that fight, it drew crazy YouTube numbers. I mean, just insane YouTube numbers because, you know, Bellator wanted, you know, people to get out there. I mean, you know, you think about, you know, that night. I mean, you look at Bellator, you know, 58, your co-main event was Hector Lombard in a 195-pound bout getting a TKO win in the second round against Trevor Prangley. Jessica Aguilar got a decision win over Lisa Ellis Ward. Marlon Sandro got a win on that card. Brett Cooper got a win on that card. Cosmo Alexander got a win on that card. You look at UFC 239 or 139, excuse me. Your co-main event was Wanderlei Silva getting a knockout over Kung Lee. And I mean, this is also, I think, for people who've been around the sport as long as I have, we can remember the days of when UFC preliminary cards were on Facebook. I think there's probably a good amount of our listeners that they may not have been a fan when you had to log into your Facebook account to watch the UFC prelims.
That's true. That was such a weird deal. When you really think about it, the interface was interesting. But yeah, they reached out to Facebook first, and it kind of shows, you know, we went through this awkward process. I mean, you had to tune into Facebook to check out Weidman and Tom Lawler face off in the main event of the Facebook prelims and go to Spike TV to watch the two fights. We used to have two fight prelims, and then you go to the pay-per-view. And unbelievable. And also, I forgot that on this very same UFC 139 fight card, we had another hell of a fight between Wanderlei Silva and Kung Lee. Mm-hmm. I mean, that fight was really awesome. It was back and forth, and Wanderlei Silva got that late victory. So really historic night. I mean, yeah, freaking Chris Weidman, who I think that might have been his third UFC fight, make his third UFC fight plus those two bangers of fights. And yeah, you used to watch it on Facebook. The Facebook stream worked fine.
Yeah,
you know, watch it for free on Facebook. And, you know, UFC was trying things out, and it kind of seems like we're at a stalemate in terms of everything is just where it's going to be for a while, and until the next big shift will be Bellator changing where it airs on TV. I feel like other than that, I feel like we're kind of consistent with UFC being locked into ESPN.
I remember a time when prelims were not on television. They were not on a streaming service. And look, you probably have to give a lot of credit to the UFC for kind of really, you know, changing how we view mixed martial arts, where the fact is, if, you know, you want to sit down on a Saturday night, obviously you can't do it the next two Saturday nights because there's no UFC for the next 2 weeks. But if you want to sit there and watch MMA for 7 hours, you have that ability. You know, even though I found myself, like, you know, when I was a beat reporter, yeah, I was doing that. Like now, I couldn't tell you the last time I sat there and watched a fight card live start to end.
Yeah, it's got to be a big fight card to invest that much time into it. I mean, I remember those pay-per-views, you would stay after the main event because they might show a prelim.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, which, man, is just crazy. God, I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They would show the best prelims, or they would probably have someone in the truck to decide whether or not to throw in a prelim in between fights based on the timing of the card.
But I will tell you this, and I know this maybe is you really can't do it if you're going out to watch an event because, you know, once that you know, the main event's over, you know, the bar is probably taking the sound off and putting music on or something else. But when I'm sitting at home watching UFC pay-per-view, I sit there, I keep the pay-per-view on, and I listen to Anik and Rogan and whoever the third guy, you know, is on the broadcast booth. I sit there and watch them just kind of recap the night of fights.
Yeah, I don't. But that's because a lot of my watching is just, I want to watch the fight and let's get out of here. But yeah, if you're sitting at home by yourself, I mean, hell yeah, go for it. Because a lot of UFC watching is that party atmosphere, you know? Mm-hmm. And everyone wants to talk whenever there's not a fight going on. So I never really appreciated the post-fight recap for those guys, but it has been a while and I've just straight up watched a fight by myself. It's mostly either I'm watching it in hindsight, like the day after I'm watching fight.
Yeah.
Or for the what happens mostly is gatherings of friends or in social settings. So yeah, it may be an underrated part of the broadcast for sure.
Yeah, it's something, but it's just kind of, man, it's crazy to think that was 8 years ago and it's been so long since that fight and to kind of see where all those fighters are now at. I mean, obviously Dana Henderson is retired, you know, Shogun at the latter part of his career where, you know, I mean, the thing is you want to, when I think of Shogun Hua, I want to remember his fight against Dan Henderson. I don't want to remember kind of, you know, how his career has gone, you know, since then. I mean, this is, so since he had that initial fight against Dan Henderson on November 19th, 2011, I'm going to tell you what he's done here, Daniel. Got a TKO win over Brandon Vera. Then he loses back-to-back fights against Alexander Gustafsson, Chael Sonnen. Knockout against James Cejudo. Then he gets defeated by Dan Henderson by knockout. Gets defeated by TKO against Ovin St. Preux. Then he went on a three-fight winning streak. Wins against Antonio Rogério Nogueira, Corey Anderson, John Vellante. Lost against Anthony Smith, which was a knockout. And then prior to this fight, which was back at the end of last year, he got a TKO win over Tyson Pedro. Clearly, the Corey Anderson split decision win is by far the best win he's had in this run, but it's also like you look at kind of where he's gone, and it's like, man, it's just, I was watching that fight and it's just like, man, this is a very slow version of Shogun.
Yeah, he is absolutely on half speed, and he had that nice little run. I mean, Dan Henderson even had a nice little run to end his career. He ended up getting a damn title shot that he didn't deserve. But yeah, this fight itself probably took a lot out of both fighters. I mean, it was a fight where you could literally see just, it was an incredible amount of violence that each guy inflicted on one another. And, you know, it came at a time when both guys were still pretty much in their prime or towards the end of their prime for Shogun and Henderson. And honestly, you look at the way both guys fought before and after this fight, they may not have ever been the same after the war at UFC 139. And then one other thought that was crazy to me was, like, when I look at the Wikipedia, this fight without a title fight did nearly 300,000 pay-per-view buys, which is pretty damn good number that the UFC would love to have for, like a welterweight championship fight and with no titles on the line. Yeah, nearly 300,000 buys.
A different world we lived in back then in terms of people going out and buying pay-per-views. I mean, I think that's just the reality of it. But in terms of major mixed martial arts news this week, I think the biggest news has to be Ben Askren announcing his retirement. He did it on Monday on Ariel Helwani's show on ESPN. And, you know, he noted about, you know, the hip surgery he's got to have, you know, and obviously it didn't go, you know, the way Ben Askren had hoped for the UFC, but you know what? He took his opportunity. But you know, when I think of Ben Askren, one of my memories will be being at his fight at Bellator 86, which I want to say was the second fight card that Bellator did on Spike. And that was actually the first Bellator event I got on a plane and went and covered. And that was at the Windsor World Casino there in Thackerville. And one of the things about that venue is when you're there for a couple of days, because essentially there is nowhere else to go. It is a casino. You eat there. You do everything at a casino. It's not like, you know, if you go to Vegas, you can leave that hotel, that casino, go somewhere else. At Thackerville, it is what it is. And I would tell any young reporters out there listening to this podcast, if you want to try to, you know, maximize content, go to an event like Thackerville, because the fact is you're going to run into all the fighters. You're going to run into people with promotion. And I remember leading up to that fight against Carl Emesu, like, there were so many people that had thought Carl was going to be able to get it done. And, like, even to the point, I'm like, okay, man, are they seeing something I'm just not seeing? And then Ben Askren goes out there and just completely dominates Carl Emesu for three rounds before the doctor finally stops his fight. So, like, that's one of my memories of Ben Askren. But it also, my thing with Ben Askren is kind of be how different would his UFC career have gone if he would have gone to the UFC in 2014 instead of 2018?
Well, I think no question he would have had a little bit more success. I still think against the top dogs in the UFC welterweight division in those years, he would have fallen. Yeah, I mean, Ben Askren is someone who, before he made the jump to the UFC, there was always that what if with him. What if he jumps to the UFC? what would happen. Is he the best welterweight of all time? He just hasn't had the opportunity to compete against them. And honestly, with Ben Askren, I mean, we know what he does really, really, really well. He goes out there and he wrestles really well. He takes guys down. He puts them down. And in the welterweight division during that time, you do have a lot of guys where you're like, well, maybe Ben could beat him. I mean, you had the guys at the top of the division were Lawler, Johnny Hendricks, Roy McDonald, Tyron Woodley, Carlos Condit, Matt Brown. Ben Askren maybe could have beat a lot of those guys.
Yeah,
maybe he could have been welterweight champion.
I think if you would take
it, look at that list,
a 31-year-old Ben Askren as opposed to a 35-year-old Ben Askren. I mean, clearly he just, you know, he was slowing down. I think there was no question about that. But it's kind of one of the, you know, it's kind of like, you know, what we talked about last week with King Mo of the Wall is if he didn't have all those injuries, how different would his career gone? We'll never know. But I mean, look, give credit to Ben Askren. He was willing to risk his undefeated record to see how he could do against UFC competition. So, you know what? And the thing is in the way he handles defeat, I think there's a lot of fighters who can learn from someone like himself, someone like Dominic Cruz, of how to handle defeat, because I think there's a lot of times in sport you see athletes that just don't understand how to handle defeat.
Yeah, Ben Askren handles it face first, does interviews, is funny about it, and is he's certainly someone you can learn a lot from. Multiple ways, he knows how to market himself and turn himself into a semi-pseudo star. Not the most entertaining fighter in the world. I mean, the one thing I remember the most is probably his ability to put me to sleep whenever I needed it. You know, if I ever needed to go to sleep, I'd put on a Ben Askren fight because God, he in the early part of his career, for the vast majority of his career, this was a lay and pray guy. I mean, that is why he was almost reviled in Bellator, is because he was so boring. He left Bellator. Bellator kicked him out, basically. I mean, I know he's had a deal with ONE FC, but I don't think Bellator was real sad about it when he left as an undefeated fighter, which tells you about his fight style. But for Ben Askren, it was simple, man. This guy was a very special talent. And realistically, the conversation for Ben Askren deep into his career wasn't like, would he compete? It was he the best? And unfortunately, we had an answer to that. But the unfortunate part about getting an answer to that is there's always going to be that additional question of, well, would he have been the best had he gone to the UFC during his prime? Physically, we won't ever know that.
Yeah. I mean, I think another fight that I always think of is just how much he demolished guys like Koreshkov and Lima. And you think where Lima's at now. I mean, I think if Askren and Lima took place now, I think the fight goes completely different than it did. And but, you know, it's, you know, we'll see, you know, we'll see how much Ben Askren stays around the sport. But, you know, I have a feeling that the Ben Askren will be involved on the media side of the sport in some way. We did get a question, a couple questions here from at JoeDaddy85 on Twitter. And Joe, your questions made me think a little bit here. His first question is, what are the top 10 MMA outlets? And I will tell you, Daniel, I wouldn't consider this an outlet, but I think to me, it's one of my go-to places, and that's the MMA Reddit. So I did not put that in my top 10. I'll go down my top 10 list for you right now. Number one, ESPN. And really, the reason I put ESPN number one is, well, A, you know, the UFC is going to feed them stories. I mean, they're a broadcast partner. Number two, MMA Junkie. I mean, look, junkies at every event seems like there is out there. You know, you're going to get good, event coverage from them. Then I go MMA Fighting, number three. Number four, Bloody Elbow. I think they do some great coverage. My number five outlet is, I don't know if a lot of people would consider this a quote-unquote outlet, but to me, it's a go-to for me, especially with me doing interviews. And that is Tapology. It's just a great source to kind of find out things about fighters. Number six, The Athletic. Seven, Sure Dog. Eight, The Score. Nine, MMA Weekly. MMA Weekly. And number 10, MMA Mania.
Yeah, man, that's a nice little list. And, you know, I think the MMA websites overall have gotten weaker over the years for sure. Mm-hmm.
I agree.
I feel as though the MMA websites were a lot better years ago when there was more money in the written word. But simply put, there isn't. People don't like reading. Yeah, number one website, themmareport.com, obviously. Jesus Christ, Jason. How the hell?
Look, I can't say my own site. Come on, yeah, man. Come on,
number one. My number two website, and then after my one and two, it'll be back to normal. But my number two website is The Wrestling Observer, F4WOnline.com. Okay. Because I grew up with that website, it is one of my favorites. It is not an MMA hotbed, but I grew up listening to Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez do their MMA and pro wrestling podcast. So those are just my favorite guys. And also Dave Meltzer has a Wrestling Observer newsletter that includes MMA stuff. And so I just grew up on Dave Meltzer, and that dude is a madman in terms of his work ethic. So that's why F4W Online is so high on my list, is just personally that website. I totally dig. And then we get back to normal. I mean, to me, my three and four, it's The Athletic and it's ESPN MMA. And it's pretty simple. I'll give you two words: money talks. And these are the two websites that are actually putting money into their MMA coverage. They're paying guys. They're bringing guys to the board of their team. And it shows. After Athletic and ESPN MMA, I think MMA Junkie, Bloody Elbow, MMA Fighting, you kind of have that middle tier of MMA websites. Each website has their own unique deal. I mean, Bloody Elbow to me is the one website where he doesn't rank there all the time, but I mean, John S. Nash is associated with that website, and he produces great stuff. And there's a lot of stuff you'll see on Bloody Elbow that you won't see on other mixed martial arts sites, which is why I appreciate it. I think I have like maybe two or three more spots left. MixedMartialArts.com is a good one in terms of going through the forums. You might see some good stuff there. SureDog is a website that was a lot better years ago, but I still like reading some of the articles as well as the forums. And if I have another spot, I don't know, man, maybe like MMA Mania. It's not that good of a website, but it's like the little stepbrother in the SB Nation stuff. And it gets... Generally, you'll see people who are getting their break in the industry start on MMAmania.com, and they'll do good stuff.
You know what I hate seeing on, you know, outlets, and it's more on the writer side. And it's more of, you know, kind of the mid tier, small tier websites, is when they'll say exclusive, and all it is they interviewed some fighter. It wasn't a fighter that they got the interview somewhere else. It's like a pet peeve of mine. Like, just because you talk to a fighter doesn't mean it's exclusive. Come on. It's just like a pet peeve of mine.
Exclusive has never, ever drawn viewers and ratings. I mean, I work where I work, there's one news station that always brags about being exclusive. And ladies and gentlemen, they have the lowest ratings in the area. It just exclusive screams of insecurity. You know, it's like, so what, every other time you do something, it's not exclusive. I don't know. Just don't say exclusive. It's just, to me, it's not a word that works. It's not a word that generates interest. If I'm a consumer, I'm not like, ooh, exclusive. Like, I mean, no, just good content works.
Yeah. So, it's like, you know, I was going through my timeline the other day and, you know, I saw an article, you know, a tweet for, you know, what the article was, and it just, I'm like, man, that is such clickbait. You know, I guess it's just not my DNA to put some clickbait headline out there. I guess it's just, you know, I'm sure I've done it at some point, but it's just something I don't want to do. You know, just to, you know, I want you to sit there and click on my interviews because, you know, it's good content, you know, and I try to offer something a little different there. The next one that Joe asked, he says, how can these sites justify sending media to events in person? Very few big time events now. He's right about that. There are very few big time events. I mean, obviously UFC 244 was a big event because of Masvidal and Diaz, but outside of that, I mean, I don't feel we've had that massive, you know, where it's really gotten people truly excited. You know, Joe, in terms of how these sites justify sending someone in person, I think the question has got to be: is that person local? If that person's local, then it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, then the expenses are nothing. I mean, you know, there's times where, I mean, look, you know, a site like MMA Junkie's got a ton of money. They've got a ton of ad revenue. But, you know, there's parts I'm like, you know, going to some fight night card in China, does that make them money? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But I think there's times where, I mean, and I know this just as someone who, had to pay, you know, for my travel expenses just to go out to Bellator and UFC events. It's not, you know, for a small business, it's, you know, it's, you know, $1,000, $2,000 it's going to cost, you know, unless you want to stay like in a Motel 8, which, Daniel, that's just not my style. You know, I'm a little fancy when it comes to I want to stay in a nice hotel and I'm not going to fly Spirit Airlines. So it does get, you know, Joe, I would say this, I don't know how some sites, especially if they don't have, you know, the revenue coming in, like say an MMA Junkie has or MMA Fighting has, I don't know how they justify it.
Yeah. And it's pretty hard to, and it's probably something where you don't see websites do it. I mean, there's no way websites are flying people out there unless they had the financial incentive to do so or the financial infrastructure. And it's hard to build that infrastructure from the ground up. It's nearly impossible to do so. I mean, a lot of these websites, the few websites that we see send guys out to every event have that infrastructure already in place. And usually it's because they're a part of a bigger corporation in the first place. Totally. Who is footing the bill and creating that, again, infrastructure. It's a key word because the way I look at infrastructure, it's like, it's an initial big investment in the product. You spend a lot of money. You're content with losing money, but you've built the infrastructure of the site, and then you can start figuring out how to make money with the content. So it's very difficult in the entire media landscape to make a living. It doesn't even stop with MMA coverage. It extends to literal news coverage. I mean, it's in the job I have now, I'm not making a living wage. I'm making a halfway decent wage, but I live with my parents and I work, you know, as a photographer. Like, it's a legit job, incredibly stressful and hard job, and it's the lifeblood of the thing you see on TV, but I still don't make a living wage. And that's news. All like, that is for every person on the planet.
I was in radio. You don't got to tell me that.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So that's like the McDonald's of media. Yeah. And we're talking about, like, I don't even know what's a niche food. We're talking about like the hummus. Like we're just a little sliver of MMA. So money is not in media. It's in being a doctor. And I don't know how people afford the bill.
For me at this point, and you know, I would love to go out to more events. I mean, look, and we have some great advertisers on this podcast. So, you know, for example, Roman, you know, they're you know, our partnership is continuing through 2020 now. You know, so I appreciate everyone that listens to this podcast and checks out Roman and sees what they have. You know, that plays into a role on if I am going to travel to an event. The other factor for me is, okay, if I go to an event, what kind of coverage can I get? Now, look, the flat out truth is I know if I go to a Bellator event, I can maximize coverage a lot just because of relationships I have. If I go to a UFC event, I'm going to get coverage that pretty much everyone else is getting. So what do I get out of it? Now, if I can go in a day or two before, know some of the fighters, we meet up at, you know, in a hotel lobby and you know, like for example, when the UFC was here, last month, literally they were, I went, you know, I knew a couple fighters on the card. I said, hey, can we do an interview? We'll sit right in the lobby. And literally we're sitting in the lobby. I'm holding a microphone. They're holding a microphone. I've got a Zoom recorder. That is as simple as it was. But I love those conversations because I feel like it's more of a, it's a natural conversation that you're sitting right next to a person and you have a natural conversation. For me, that's what I'm looking for. You know, like I can go to a Mohegan event. I mean, look, I've got a great relationship with Mike Mazzulli. I know a lot of people who live up in Connecticut. So it makes a lot of sense for me, but you know, but look, it's not cheap. I mean, look, for me to get an airfare and, I stay at Mohegan. Mohegan's not a cheap hotel to stay at. I'm just being honest. Yeah. It's really nice rooms, just not very cheap to stay at. So that's what it is for me. The next question from Joe Daddy, he goes, is the Schmo a top 10 interviewer now? Don't see too many MMA interviewers from the top sites. Who are your top 10 interviews? To me, the Schmo is a top 10 interviewer. I know, yeah, look, he's got a shtick. And it's a shtick that maybe some people aren't going to love, but I enjoy his interviews. His YouTube following is insane, Daniel. I think he has God, I would look it up now, but I think he has like over 75,000 subscribers on YouTube. I mean, it is crazy the amount of subscribers he has, and his interviews are very good. Like, you can hate on the guy. Yeah, he's got 77.3K subscribers. I mean, I think he does a very good job. He's found his niche in a sport. To me, he is a top 10 interviewer.
Yeah. What I like about him is it's funny, and yeah. It seems like what I like about the Schmo, if you're looking at it from like a meta perspective, is it makes a lot of the fighters that get him real comfortable around him. You know, he did a great interview with Sean O'Malley, I saw, and they, you know, they're fans of him, some of them. And so when you have guys who are aware of the interviewer, they know they're going to have a good time, you get them a little more relaxed, and mm-hmm. maybe they'll show a side that you won't see in your stereotypical MMA interview. So I'm not a big interview guy in terms of, I just don't consume that much MMA interview media. But I know, you know, the best interviewer in the game is obviously Jason Floyd for the love of God. But I mean, when I think of the best, I can't come up with the top 10, but I mean, I know the basics. Guys, yeah, I mean, it's like, you. It's you, Ariel Helwani. Obviously, is the OG of interviews, and
yeah,
he's asked less tough questions. But
this is my thing. When I'm interviewing fighters, what I do is I go to YouTube, and I'll put in their name. You know, like for example, so I talked to James Krause yesterday. That interview will be up here on the the website here later on this week. And so I just put his name in. So I watched at that point he had done. You know, I watched a scrum that he did. You know, following his win last weekend, you know, so that's, you know, there's some, you know, I think great writers I could put there. But when I was thinking about my top interviewers, and I only came up with seven names, and this is because I like to hear the question. You know, I remember early on in my radio career, you know, one of the things that was said to me is, says, you know, you pull up that paper and you see some headline, you read an article, and you see the quote from the athlete, but you really don't know what was the question or questions that led to that answer. And that's why one of the things I love about what I do in this show and the content that I put on YouTube is that, you know, the question that I asked to get the answer that I got, you know, so when I looked at so that's kind of how I put my list together. You know, I put Ariel number one, I put Joe Rogan number two. I really like his, when he has MMA, you know, people on his podcast, just cause you know, it's just not your typical answer. James Lynch does a great job now with the Score. George and Goes, who have done MMA Junkie Radio, which is now in a podcast form, Schmo, Josh Gross. And the last guy I'll mention, I know he's someone that either you love or hate, is Luke Thomas. You know, I've listened to his SiriusXM show, you know, and I know he puts a lot of his content on YouTube as well. He's a guy up there. I had someone mention Fernanda Prades, who's now with The Athletic. You know, I'm not, you know, I've seen her articles, I've read her articles, but I can't really say that I've really listened to audio of her doing an interview. Someone also mentioned Thomas Grabassi of UFC.com. Once again, read his articles, but you know, really have never heard him, you know, do the interview. So for me, it's more about, I want to hear the questions and like one of the things I always do, and I mentioned about how I go to YouTube, is I want to hear other interviewers, and then because how can I make my interview different? Because one of the things that I do more often than not, and you hear it throughout this show, is that I don't most of the interview is not about their upcoming fight. I try to make it about other things.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting tactic, and it's, you know, there's a lot of similar themes we're getting at throughout this entire show. And I think when you look at an interview, it's 100% what you can do to make your interview unique. Mm-hmm. And that's really a strategy. I mean, and also another theme of this show has been nostalgia. And it's like, man, I'm nostalgic about the old school era Helwani pre and post fight UFC interviews. Those were a big deal. Because again, the content was not there in terms of, it wasn't oversaturated yet. And so you would wait for Ariel to interview all these guys before and after their fights, and he would get real good info. He would talk to Dana White after fights, ask him some hard questions. And, to me, that was really good stuff because there was so little interview coverage. It just felt better. And now that the content is probably better, the issue is there's more content. So and just everything, you know. Yeah, I think that's a good list. And again, I mean, I don't interview people too often. I only really interview people for my job. Yeah. And that's something where it is. We're cutting up sound bites. We're not playing the whole interview. But the two things I think of when it comes to interviewing people that is so important is, number one, you got to listen to people.
Totally,
and you got to understand. Like, and here's the thing. So, like, here's an example. Like, yesterday I did a story about we started our day off, and the whole coverage was about these kids in high school who started this campaign about how you should drink water rather than sugary drinks to prevent diabetes. So that was our story. Excuse me. But we had to go and interview a normal person on the street, a man on the street, to add to our story. And our initial idea was, let's go interview three or four people and we'll start the story off talking about, oh, what do you drink? Oh, I drink four Cokes a day. I drink blah, blah, blah. And then we explain to them. And then the end of the package is them talking about how they drink water. And when we got the first interview, the guy was like, no, I drink water. I'm like, oh, damn. I guess there's that expectation. And so, and I was with a younger reporter, so she didn't know how to bounce back. And she kind of, you could tell she was defeated. But by the way, when you get someone to agree to do an on-camera interview, you got to hold it, because like, people don't like being on camera. So every time you get someone to say yes, you got to make it work. But the kid mentioned how he had something about diabetes. And so we changed the course of the interview, and he told us about how he drinks water because one of his family members died of diabetes, and so many have it. So you got to shift. And, mm-hmm. and so that was the shift. We listened to him. And even though we had a preconceived idea of what we wanted to do, we got something better about it, where he talked to us about his family's history with diabetes. So that's a long way of saying you got to be flexible, adjustable. You come in with a preconceived idea of how the interview will go. But the best interviews are on the fly, ad-libbing and listening.
Oh, totally. It's one of the biggest things I learn. And when I do interviews, like I don't write down questions. And I'm not BSing you. This is just, when I do an interview, I will write down the fighter's name, the record, if they've got an upcoming fight, or if they've just had a fight, you know, maybe write down a couple of bullet points about maybe some things they said in other interviews that I want them to expand upon, but I don't write down questions.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go about it.
I want to make it conversational. I don't want it to be question, answer. And I'm always listening to what they say, because there might be something in their answer that I can, hey, you know, can you kind of follow up on what you said there? You know, and to where the person you're interviewing may not realize they just gave you something.
Yeah, part of the job is identifying. It's kind of like mining for gold, and you got to identify where the gold is, what the story is that a person can tell you and share with the world that maybe they don't know they have, or they aren't aware of how interesting it is. And then you kind of lead them there, and you get something good out of them. I mean, that's like the real value of an interview. It's just a nice little process to unearth information that may be interesting to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you an example of this. So I'm talking to James Krause yesterday, and I knew James was in this position where he's not going to sit there and talk about who he wants next. And one of the things he mentioned to me was, I have to have my desire to fight. And if my desire is not there, he goes, I'm fine with this being my last fight. He says, but you know what? I might have 5 or 10 more fights. And so I kind of, you know, my follow-up question was, well, is it a fear of yours that your desire will never come back? And you know, he basically said no. He's like, I'm at peace with everything. And so that's just kind of an example of just, you know, I try to listen. I mean, but there's times I'll go back and when I'm editing an interview and, you know, putting the video part of it together, there's times I'll listen to it. I'll say, damn it. I missed something. You know, they said something. And I was like, God damn it. I should have followed up with that. You know, yeah. And everyone's gone through it. I've gone through it. If someone who's in media is listening to this, they've gone through it as well, where like you've just gone back, you've listened to it, and you're just like, damn it, I missed something.
It happens all the time, and not just in media, in any job you do, except for like, I don't know, I feel like delivering the mail, you usually get it right 100% of the time. Like you, I mean,
if you don't, you get some pissed off. Like if someone's like waiting for a check in their mailbox, I mean, pissed off of you, you put it in the wrong mailbox.
Yeah. I feel like mail guys usually get it right. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure even them, they might screw up. But yeah, there's always that that blind side, that blind spot you may have.
I remember this was years ago. I was waiting for a check. And, you know, it hadn't come in yet. And I hadn't said anything yet, you know, and I get a call from the person who was, you know, said, "Hey, you're still at this address, right?" I go, yeah. "That's my house." And I'm like, "Why?" He goes, "Oh, we got your check back saying you don't live there." I go, "What?" I go, "Yes, I'm here."
Yeah.
But that does happen. But you know, Daniel, it is November. Hell, we're Thanksgiving's next week. So we did want to start our end of the year topics. And we want to talk about fighter of the year candidates, story of the year candidates, and fight of the year candidates. Let's start with fight of the year. I came up with four. And I know our lists are exactly the same. And I couldn't think of a Bellator fight. And look, if there's a Bellator fight we're just not thinking of, man, tweet it at me at Jason_Floyd or at Daniel Gavon DGG. And the fights that we came up with, in no particular order here, even though I think the first one I'm going to name is probably going to be the number one for a lot of people, Israel Adesanya versus Kevin Gastelum. Vicente Luque versus Brian Barberena. I mean, that was just an awesome fight. Dustin Poirier versus Max Holloway. And then the fourth one I came up with was John Jones versus Thiago Santos.
Yeah, man. The Jones Santos one is one that I didn't have on my list, but when I think about it, I'm like, damn, that was a pretty good fight for sure. So that, I mean, for me, the top three is simple, man. It's that mix of Adesanya, Gastelum, Barberena, Luque, and Holloway, Poirier, and you know, there's quite a few other good fights of the year in the UFC. I mean, you had plenty, like you mentioned Santos Jones. I also have on my list Cody Garbrandt versus Pedro Munoz is quite good. Barboza versus Gaethje, I like. Cerrone versus Alexander Hernandez, Nico Price and Tim Means were a couple other really good fights. By the end of the day, my pick for fight of the year would be Adesanya Gastelum. I just love that last round from Adesanya. It had everything I wanted. It was a back and forth fight, really good stuff, twists and turns, and it had a guy at the very end showcasing his heart and courage, and just putting, you know, taking advantage of his opponent and winning the championship in the fifth round.
Yeah. Now, in terms of story of actually, let's go fighter of the year. I had six names, no particular order here. Israel Adesanya, Ryan Bader, Patricio Pitbull, Henry Cejudo, Jorge Masvidal, and Douglas Lima.
That's a good one. I mean, I really only had five names. Five, and it's not even like in contention, but I just wanted to mention her. Amanda Nunes. She only had one win this year, but she's the best female fighter of all time. So she had the win over Holm, but she's five. And then the rest, Douglas Lima, who you mentioned in Bellator, obviously beating McDonald was huge. And then my top three, man, I mean, Masvidal's number three for me. Cejudo's number two with his win over Dillashaw Moraes. And my number one fighter of the year is my fighter of the year, Israel Adesanya. I mean, he had one hell of a year, starting it off by putting away a legend, beating Gastelum, beating Whitaker. I mean, he ends the year as the undisputed middleweight champion. Israel Adesanya is my early fighter of the year.
Yeah, I think Israel would be the pick for pretty much everybody. Then story of the year, I've got three stories. One is the Nate Diaz USADA UFC 244 fiasco, where kind of Nate Diaz really changed the script on the UFC and USADA in that one. Number two, I would say TJ Dillashaw failing a drug test and being suspended 2 years. And my number three, I would put out there, is from a combat sport consumer aspect, ESPN is 1,000,000% greater than FS1.
Yeah, that's the big time, big picture story of the year, and I get that a lot. A lot of crazy stories this year. I couldn't figure out which Conor McGregor story to put in there, but there's a lot of them. No, a lot of them aren't nice, but my pick for story of the year is a long-term story. Just the rise of Jorge Masvidal. It started with the fight against Darren Till, a hell of a fight in England, and then a highlight reel knockout over Ben Askren, one of the best knockouts in the history of the company. That made him a star. And then he was a part of one of the biggest fights of the year against Nate Diaz, and he got the win. Donald Trump was in the building. The Rock was in the building. They created a title. The rise of Jorge Masvidal this year is my story of the year.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you on that one. Another thing we want to do here before we get into the interview portion is ranking our most valuable fighters in MMA. And when I was putting my list together, I just went by organization. I'll just start off with one championship to me is clearly DJ. PFL, do we even have to say her name? Because it's pretty clear.
Yes, yeah, Sarah Kaufman. I got you. Yes. Oh, no, Kayla Harrison.
Yeah. Clearly Kayla Harrison. The UFC, Amanda Nunes, Khabib, John Jones, Henry Cejudo, Israel Adesanya, Nate Diaz. And I know I didn't put my list just because, well, he hasn't been fighting. But I guess we have to include Conor McGregor.
Yeah, Conor McGregor is the most valuable fighter in the world. Oh, by the way, who do you got in Bellator?
I've got Douglas Lima, Patricio Pitbull, Ryan Bader, Alimaleh McFarlane, and Chris Cyborg.
Okay, yeah, I think Chris Cyborg is probably the most valuable non-UFC fighter. Well, DJ and Harrison, that's true. I don't know, it's tough. Those are my big three. Then like Alimaleh would be number four.
That's an interesting topic.
Yeah.
Most valuable fighter not in the UFC.
Is it Tito Ortiz? You know, no, I'm joking, but I think the answer is Cyborg. But I could be wrong. I mean, with Demetrius, he's the best fighter not in the UFC, but he has not been promoted well at all to the American audience. And it just seems like Demetrius Johnson, who left the UFC as a pound for pound fighter, is just a small tree in the woods.
Here's the only reason I would say Kayla Harrison. Mm-hmm. There's more mileage available in the Kayla Harrison business than there is a Chris Cyborg business.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think those two people will meet outside of the UFC. Would not be shocked if that happens. Yeah, because I mean, to me, those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. To me, it's very clear, but yeah, it's, you know, it's one of the things with Kayla Harrison is can she become a household name?
Yeah,
fighting in the PFL.
No, that I don't think so.
I mean, she's gonna put a lot of money in the bank. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. So God bless her for being able to put those checks in the bank account. But yeah, I think in terms of her being a Ronda Rousey type star power, I don't know if she can do that in the PFL. I think you have to be in the UFC.
I think without it. Yeah, I do too. I did too. Potentially Bellator, you can make it happen also. But I agree with you. In terms of my top five, number one's Conor McGregor. He's the most valuable guy in the history of the sport. And he still will fight, potentially. Number two, John Jones. Number three, Nate Diaz. He exploded this year. Four and five is Khabib and Cejudo. You mentioned a couple of other guys on my list. So the guys you didn't mention who I feel like are valuable – Stipe Miocic, Tony Ferguson, Max Holloway, Kamaru Usman, and then also Jorge Masvidal would be another guy. And who knows, maybe Tyson Fury. And then the other one would probably be, Daniel Cormier. Even when he's not fighting, he's still valuable to the UFC as a commentator.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great point. That is a great point. But, yeah, it's there's definitely a ton of valuable fighters there still in this sport. But right now it is time for the interview portion of the show. First, you're going to hear my conversation with the Cage Warriors light heavyweight champion, Modestus Bukauskas, who's going to defend his title on Friday at Cage Warriors 111. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Brandon Royval, who's going to beat Nate Williams for the flyweight title on Friday at LFA 79. And the final conversation will be with Michael Stack, who's going to take on Brian Mitchell at LFA 79. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to defend his light heavyweight title at the Cage Warriors event November the 22nd in England, of course, live on UFC Fight Pass. Modestus, as always, man, I appreciate the time. We talked a couple months ago, but I've, you know, a little birdie told me you were on a dating show since then.
That seems like the word going around town, isn't it? They filmed it last year, so under the radar. We actually filmed it all in 4 days. I think the whole show for like all the episodes took about a month and a bit, And yeah, they were supposed to air it in January, but for some reason, one or another, I'm not sure, they might have missed the slot on TV. But yeah, they only just shown it right now. So it's funny, what people are seeing on TV was actually a whole year ago. People are still asking me, oh, have you went to Isle of Fernando's yet? And I'm like, yeah, it was quite a while ago. But yeah, awesome experience it was.
How did that come together?
Right. So, I mean, I don't know if people just found me on the internet or something, because I was basically just, you know, rummaging around the internet as one does. And then, you know, being quite naive, I saw a friend request saying something Caster. And I thought, oh, it's a bit of a weird surname, but all right, cool. And I just added it, you know, just I was like, you know, keep the friend requests up, you know. Get my popularity up and stuff. And then I saw on the page had like an application for a dating show. And I was like, fancy my chances. Why not, you know, fill out the application, everything. And then, yeah, literally about 5 minutes after I finished the application, I got a call from an unknown number. And I don't usually pick up unknown numbers. So I obviously just left it. Me thinking absolutely nothing of it. And then next thing you know, 5 minutes later, I get another message saying, oh, hey, this is a Caster from the TV show, blah, blah, blah. We would love to have a phone chat with you. And then, yeah, we had like an hour and a half long chat talking about my application, me just talking absolute nonsense as usual. And then, yeah, they invited me down for an audition. And then, yeah, it pretty much just went off from there. They had me like, you know, doing everything that I was supposed to do on the show, but like in this like small cramped little studio room with pictures of girls up on the wall and me just like dancing my butt off in front of these pictures on the wall and stuff. So yeah, it was good. And then obviously after that, they said, you know, we'll see how many through all the applications, we'll look through it. And if you're chosen, they'll get you to do your VT. And then, you know, the ball started rolling pretty much from there.
And of course, have you found out this has kind of helped your popularity, where like even people who've watched the show are like, you're a fighter? Do you kind of get that reaction from people?
Well, you know, obviously before the show went on, you know, I was a little bit skeptical, because I'm like, should I go on it? Should I not? You know, obviously I was focusing very strongly on my fighting career. And last year I was still focusing on the hard, but I was, you know, it's quite hard for me to find an opponent. And yeah, but obviously my dad and my stepmom, you know, they supported me full fledged for it. And they said, listen, it's going to, like you say, it's amazing, you know, for publicity, you know, even if, you know, it doesn't come across even the best way, you know, you're in the public sight and everything like that. And, you know, it's just a great experience. You know, how many people in the country get to do this type of TV show? Obviously, it seems like, oh, there's a lot of people that get chosen, but really it's a small percentage. So, you know, it's just to be able to experience that sort of environment was absolutely amazing. So obviously taking on this sort of role of, you know, just you know, taking all these stressful and crazy situations full swing and just embracing it, and that would be one of the situations where I just thought, you know what, I'm just going for it and enjoy it.
We're now a week out from your title defense, man. It's obviously you've been in full preparations, you know, for this matchup. Like, what's kind of like the mindset right now? Is it just kind of the you're trying to just those minor things to tune up to be ready for the 22nd?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously I work hard all the time. You know, since my last fight, I haven't really taken, you know, much breaks. I'm always looking as a martial artist to improve my skill set. I'm looking to be the best martial artist that I can be and to be known as the best. So, you know, the only way you can do that is if you're training, constantly working and constantly trying to improve your skill set. So really at this point, you know, everything is feeling very similar to my last fights. You know, I'm sort of ramping up the intensity in my head, and that, you know, I'm going into a fight, you know, obviously enjoying and being excited about it, like, you know, I just want to get in there. But at the same time, you know, there's a sense of, you know, like, you know, Jorge Masvidal talks about, you know, having the violence that he likes to bring. So that sort of violent mindset sort of starts creeping in right about now, and then especially in fight week, and then as it gets close to the fight, and then you sort of get in there, and that mixed with the excitement, you know, helps me to bring out my best performance. And that's what I'm looking to do on November 22nd.
In terms of your opponent here, what do you see as what you have to accomplish to walk away with the victory?
Well, he's a very good fighter. Another tough, you know, very durable fighter, and obviously given much respect. You know, he seems like he's mainly a wrestling based fighter, similar to my last one. However, he does have heavy hands and heavy ground and pound. So realistically, it's going to be a very very similar game plan. Stuff the takedowns. Don't let him take me down at all this time, and go and work to tee him off the feet and go and finish it from the feet.
I mean, is there part of your mindset is like, hey, I've got to finish this fight? You know, obviously you'd be happy with the win no matter how it comes, but would there be a part of you that'd be disappointed if it was a decision?
You know, obviously in the fight game, you can't really predict anything. You can have your game plan. You can work towards what you want to do, but, you know, obviously it can go any way. You can finish or you cannot. To be honest, I'll be obviously very happy just with another a win. A win is amazing, but obviously, yeah, a part of me would be like, you know, I'm always looking for the finish. That is the main thing in my fight. And, you know, I've tallied up, and obviously this is without even noticing, but I tallied up, you know, out of 9 victories, I've got 8 finishes. So obviously I want to try and keep the streak going. And yeah, I think if you're fighting with that ferocity and, you know, looking for the finish, that brings a more exciting fight. And obviously I want to bring exciting fights, and at the same time that just makes me more dangerous to get the win. So decision or finish, obviously I'm just looking to go in there and win that fight and solidify my place as the best in Europe.
When you look at your opponent here, what have you thought about how you think he's going to try to fight you? Or is the mindset of like, look, I got to worry about myself. I can't, you know, I'm going to understand what he wants to do, but this is about me.
I think it's similar to every opponent that I face. I always take into account, obviously, what they're good at, because you can't go in there overconfident. You can't go in there, you know, obviously, yeah, I've got to concentrate on my own skill, because obviously at the end of the day, like I said, I'm working every single day to try and improve myself as a person and as a fighter. So I'm constantly trying to improve my skill set. But I do obviously have to take into account where he's dangerous and where possibly I can turn those dangers into something going into favor for myself. So yeah, I know where he's going to be strong. I know where he's going to want to look to take the fight and stuff like that. And obviously it's my job to negate that and then put on the pressure myself and implement my game plan.
What do you think, for everyone that's going to tune in on UFC Fight Pass to watch this title fight, what's going to be the major difference we're going to see in you as opposed to the last time we saw you?
I'm just a much better fighter. Like I say, with the steadily daily improvements, you know, I've had training partners which every time they haven't rolled in me for a long time, you know, they say how much better I've gotten. And again, I like to pay attention to detail. I try and consistently, even in my striking, you know, a lot of people can, you know, they class me as a striker, but I'm always trying to improve everything, even the striking aspect, you know, so they can just expect to see a much more improved version of myself. Like I say, I make a step up every single time I get in there. My mind's clearer. Everything just seems to be a step up. So you can see a sort of an evolution of myself, almost like, you know, when a Pokemon turns from like their stage 1 to like the stage 2. Mm-hmm. So this is what I feel like I've made that jump up to now, the second stage of my full fighting skill set.
And of course, everyone's going to be able to watch this fight live on UFC Fight Pass, November 22nd, Cage Wars 111. As always, man, I appreciate time. Of course, let me know anything, follow you on social media. Anybody else you want to shout out, the floor is yours.
Wicked. Thank you once again, obviously, for having me. I really appreciate you having me on the show again. So on Instagram, it's MODYB24. On Twitter, it's basically most of my name and with a one at the end, but it's capital M, then lowercase ODESTAS, then uppercase B, lowercase UKAUS1. Obviously that's a bit of a mouthful, I can understand. On Facebook, it's my full name, obviously I've got to give a shout out, first and foremost, you know, to all my training partners, all the people who helped me to improve and get better as a fighter, you know, starting off with my dad, Gintas, and obviously Denison Sutherland, Danny Batten, everyone down at BST, everyone at Mill Hill BJJ, Roger Gracie's, Academy, everyone at Legion Fitness, So, like I say, all of those guys, they help in between fights to get me to that next level. And I've got to give them massive credit and a lot of help for that. I've got a lot of sponsors that are also helping me. I've got people that, you know, are constantly supporting me and trying to get me to the top. And you lot know who you are, and I've got to say thank you for those. I'm just going to shout out the sponsors real quick. Sorry, I'll go on long with this one. But Merikilo, amazing clothing brand. Mauler MMA, another amazing up-and-coming clothing brand. Also, Sancti Pue is actually one of my friends' brand from the TV show, so shout out to them. Distinct Physiotherapy, amazing, always keeping me in tip-top shape. Black Sheep Dispensaries, CBD, again, top-notch stuff. Fighter Shop UK, giving me all the best equipment ever. Got to give a massive shout out to them. The Gym Deli as well for providing me with food and stuff like that. And I know, like, obviously there's a lot of people, you know, who are backing me and helping me. So I'm sorry if I missed anyone out, because all of you lot are just amazingly helpful in getting me to the top. And yeah, all of you lot are going to be part of the big occasion when I go in there, go and stop this guy, defend my belt. And still, November 22nd.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man steps back inside competition here. LFA 79, November the 22nd. He fights for the flyweight title. Brandon, man, appreciate the time. Obviously, LFA now on Fight Pass. This kind of, how would you describe the last 2 months for you in terms of kind of, you know, obviously LFA was trying to get their TV deal squared away. What's it been like for you just kind of waiting for all this to kind of come together?
For me, the last 2 months have been a little chaotic, honestly, a little more or less. I'm grateful that the LFA is still coming to Colorado, and I'm grateful that I'm a part of the card, and I'm still the main event, and I'm still fighting for the flyweight belt. But the last 2 weeks have been exotic, man. I virtually went through 2 weight cuts, 2 camps, 3 different opponent changes. To finally land on Jared Scoggins is awesome, man. I really appreciate that he took the fight and all that stuff. But the last couple months has been nothing but pure chaos for me. I sold the most tickets I've ever sold my whole entire career just to go get them all refunded back. And like, but you know, I'm just grateful that I can chase a dream and have another day that I can fight and represent and fight for the LFA belt and just be their champion, man. Cause like I said, it's one of my big goals.
Like what's the hardest part about preparation for this fight, the change in opponents or trying to time, you know, cutting weight to make sure you're going to, you know, obviously make championship weight. What's the hardest? Is one harder than the other to deal with?
I think the hardest part about the whole entire thing was just staying focused, man. Because immediately as soon as the fight got like canceled, they're like, we're looking for an immediate like new date for it. We're going to look for a quick turnaround. So not knowing was like, all right, well, I can't take my like foot off the gas at this point. So I just had to keep just pushing down it. And like, so I went from virtually being done with my whole fight camp. I found out on a Wednesday, which Thursday is my last day of fight camp, and the Thursday before. So today will be like my last real hard day of fight camp. Yeah. And so I was like, all the work has been done. My weight was like 10 pounds away. And like, just to go right back into camp, go right back into hard conditioning and right back at that, right when you think all the hard work's done and all that. It was a little discouraging. It was a little hard to stay focused. And it wasn't hard to stay focused because I have a big task in front of me. I have a goal that's going to lead to is ultimately going to lead to like possible career change. You know what I'm saying? And so it wasn't hard to stay focused, but like, it was definitely a little discouraging, man. It was definitely a little like, oh, well, now we got to dial it back and then get ready to go again. And I didn't know when I was going to fight necessarily. So a big part of that is just like, stay ready. Got to stay on weight. I got to not cheat on my diet. I got to not do whatever. I can't go out and just like act like I'm done with this fight and go out and like hang out with my friends and go drink or anything or whatever it is, you know? So like I said, just constant focus, a little discouraged about everything, but it's going to all pay off. So.
Is that also is like the hardest thing for you during camp? Is like, man, I'd love to go out and just get like a pizza or a nice burger or something, have a drink with the fellas. Is that kind of the hardest part for you?
Yeah, that's exactly. So I just want to go out and just like have like I'm Hispanic, bro. I'd eat Mexican food, go out with my family. Yeah, exactly. Like everybody around me cooks so fucking good, and I miss like because I've been preparing for the fight before that, the October fight. We're the main event, so I knew about it. Like as soon as they decided to come to Colorado, I knew that I was on that card. I was going to main event it for that flyweight belt. And so I started that diet then, man. So I've been dieting, skipping birthdays for like 4 months now, man. Like, or like at least 3.5 months of just like every time there's a birthday party, everybody's eating cake around me. And I'm just, like I said, I have a huge family. I'm Hispanic. So I'm missing out on all of that stuff. So I don't know. Like I said, but it's all going to pay off. I know that that ultimate sacrifice and that my career has always been a little bit bumpy and that it's all going to go somewhere now. So I'm excited.
You know, fighters always talk about those sacrifices you have to make to get to, you know, where you want to go. For you, is it about kind of the social part of your life of, you know, there's times you want to, you know, go to a family function or go hang out with the friends, but you're like, I can't, I got to be in the gym. I got to be preparing. Is that your biggest sacrifice?
Oh man, this, it's as far as biggest sacrifice, man. I've sacrificed friends, relationships, family, not family necessarily, but like, man, I've made ultimate sacrifices. And like I said, that's why I'm almost sure this is all going to pay off. I've made a ton of sacrifices in every aspect of my life. It's just, I cheat people out of time. I cheat my friends out of like valuable time. I'm not like the best friend because I work on the days that I'm not training, and I train almost every goddamn day. So it's just constant work, man. Being a rising fighter isn't an easy job, man. Cause if you want to be to the fullest level, you got to train like you're a full-time UFC fighter, and you're not getting paid that amount. So you're having to work a full-time job and then trying to find a balance within your life, which is, makes life pretty difficult. So, yeah, man, like it's all difficult, man. Just trying to maintain relationships with everybody, trying to be a good friend, a good family member, a good cousin, whatever I am, you know what I'm saying? It takes a little bit of a toll, because I'm virtually working two jobs for sure, man. Yeah,
so. Do you ultimately feel this is a fight that's going to get you to that bigger stage? I mean, you kind of feel like this is it. This is, you know, this is that final test to get to where you want to be.
100%. I'm going to go out there and make a statement, man. I'm not going to give them any room to doubt me at all. I'm not going to go out there and fight for a decision. I'm going to go out there and make a statement in my hometown. So like I said, he's going to my backyard, and I'm going to make a statement there. And, not only am I going to make a statement, but I'm going to turn some heads. So that's the way I have to do it.
Do you feel pressure fighting in your hometown?
Yeah, kind of. not really. Because I know a lot of people. Like, I know a lot of people are going to come. But at the end of the day, they're not getting in the cage. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not doing this. So I think I get a lot of respect from all of them, no matter what the situation is. So I don't necessarily feel pressure by them or by the situation. But I just... For me, it's always the same thing, man. It's always like, I want to go and impress myself. I want to go out there and just like, I want to, as a fighter, man, you want to just show the world what you can do. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes you can freeze up, and freezing up, like it happens to fighters, you know what I'm saying? So for me, it's just, if I can go out there and display what I do, if I can go out there and just be myself, I know I'm going to do a great job. I know I'm going to go whoop his ass. I know I'm going to go put on a performance. So all I have to do, I don't have to go out there and do anything special fighting Jared. I just have to go out there and be myself, and that's going to be good enough that night.
Is that ultimately what you say the biggest key is? Is just, I got to be myself. I can't be something I'm not.
Yeah, exactly, man. Because I don't know. I think the ultimate goal is just like, I don't know, just putting a little piece of myself in my work right there, man. And a little bit of myself is an emotional brawler. A little bit of myself is a creative striker. A little bit of myself is whatever it is. I'm an attacker. I'm a little bit of like, you know what I'm saying? So like I said, just for me, as long as I can go out there and like, you know, the Bruce Lee, like express yourself in a, like, honestly, if I can go out there and just express myself in the way of fighting and just show of like what I put, like I put a lot of love and a lot of hard work into this sport. If I can go out there and just show that, man, that's good enough for me, man. That's going to be a good night. And not only is it going to be a good night, I'm going to win. I'm going to win that fight. If I go out there and just do that, if I go out there and just, I put a lot of work into this fight, I put a lot of love into this sport. And like I said, if I go out there and just show that and just go out there to just show what I can do, I know I'm going to do an awesome job, man.
Got to wrap up with this is the nickname Raw Dog. What is the origin of this?
The origin of that nickname is, you know how like people are like, nicknames are earned or like not given, they're earned. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I have a long time training partner. I've been training with him since I was 16 years old. And me and his roommate and myself is just, we're acquaintances too, like good friends and all that. So I think he was just drunk at one of my fights. and just like said it randomly. And it, like, we kind of like joked about it for years and years and just like, oh yeah, Brandon Raw Dog. So then I fought for a World Series of Fighting, one of my fights. And they're like, you got to go out to that name. Like, what if your fight gets put on TV? Cause I was like, the thing about it is like, yeah, if you had an impressive win or impressive finish, they're going to play your fight on TV because they had enough time for that. And I was like, all right, cool. So I went out there as Brandon Raw Dog Royville and I knocked the dude out. So then it was like a little bit of superstition after that. So it kind of just stuck. And then, like I said, the nickname's funny. It kind of makes me giggle that they say it on TV and all that stuff. Every time they say it, I'm like, I can't believe you just did that. But I don't know. Like I said, it's a little bit of a joke. It's a nice way to kind of keep an intense moment a little soft-hearted too. So, and like I said, it rolls off the tongue, man.
Exactly. And of course, everyone's going to be able to see your fight here on UFC Fight Pass, LFA 79, November the 22nd. Brandon, really appreciate the time. Of course, let me know anything you find on social media. Anybody else you want to shout out, the floor is yours.
Hey, man, I appreciate you too. Yeah, I would like to give a shout out to one, my team at Factory X, my team at Landau Performance, my strength and conditioning coach is awesome. All my main training partners have such great flyweight training partners and just training partners in general. And then, as far as my sponsors go, man, I have Stashbox as my main sponsor right now. Stashbox is a local company down in Boulder who do a ton of things, but mainly the thing that they're sponsoring me with is, like a Stashbox vape type pin that, does CBD and all that. A CBD company called Cure Native, a CBD and hemp company called Cure Native has been big for me. And then Tushy Tea. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Tushy Tea is another great one. It's a CBD tea. Like I said, all these Colorado companies that are just sticking by me and believe in me, man, has been a big deal in my life. And like I said, it means the world to me. So I appreciate all of them. And then last and especially not least is my management, Team Iridium, man. I have the hardest working management company there is, man. So they do a lot for me. They do a lot for us fighters. There's not a fight card in UFC, LFA, or any weekend where there's not an Iridium fighter out there destroying someone. So I'm proud to be a part of that Team Dark Side and then Team Factory X and Landau and all that stuff.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man who steps into the LFA cage coming up here on Friday night, November the 22nd. LFA 79, Michael Stack back on the program. We talked a couple months ago, and you mentioned about, hey, I believe my next fight's going to be an LFA. And just unfortunately got delayed about a month. How did that alter your preparations for this fight, the fact of, you know, the fight happening, you know, 45 days after it was initially supposed to?
Well, it gave me more time. First of all, thanks for having me back on the show, Jason. But yeah, it gave me more time to prepare, you know, and work some things out for the first camp. Some things had happened that kept me from training the way I'd like to, you know. And so when it actually did get delayed a little bit, it worked out in my favor. I could have gone either way. I mean, if I had fought October 4th, I would have been prepared and ready to go. But it was nice. It mentally gave me a little bit more relaxation to, you know, go into this fight more confidently, for sure.
One thing, when I was looking at your opponent, Brian Mitchell, I think one of the things that, while it's only his second pro fight, he had a 10, 11 fight amateur career, which, I mean, a substantial amateur career when you have that amount of fights. What stuck out to you about him when this fight was initially approached to you?
They gave me quite a few names for LFA when they were first showing me this fight. And out of all the guys that they gave me, there were two that really stuck out. And he was the toughest at the 145 weight class, in my opinion. So I chose to go with Brian Mitchell because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to test my skills against someone that was that I considered the toughest fight at the time. So at that weight class, they were also looking at 155, but I kind of wanted to do the 145 cut right this time. You know what I mean? And make sure that this is the weight class that I can stay at. And as far as everything's gone so far, it's been perfect. So
in terms of, I know we talked about that last time about, you know, going down the 45 and how has, did you have to make any big changes in terms of, you know, during camp of, you know, where your weight needs to be and things along those lines?
Well, yes. not big changes in the sense that it was something that I noticed every single day, besides the fact that I'm eating differently. But we started, so I actually hired my best friend, Logan Clark, who he was a bodybuilder, huge into the bodybuilding scene, and he kind of pivoted over to the coaching nutritional aspect of it. So I hired him and I asked him to help me with my diet this time around. And we started the diet about 7 weeks out. And I was, you know, from the first time that I started the diet to even to right now, I've lost 11 or 13 pounds. So a significant amount just doing diet manipulation. And then we're going to water load and get more, even more weight off as that approaches. But yeah, it's been significantly better. Energy's up, way up. I haven't been lethargic or fatigued, whereas before I was. So
you mentioned previously about, you know, hey, you know, there was a couple of names out there and you were looking for the difficult matchup. You know, there there may be people in your position that wouldn't take that route. Is it just the competitive side of you of like, look, I want to fight the toughest, you know, competition possible to show, you know, my abilities and also show other promoters, you know, the bigger promoters in this game, that you're willing to take those big, those tough fights?
You know, I don't know if it's necessarily to show them or to like show myself, you know what I mean? I wouldn't feel good going and beating somebody that I already knew I was going to beat. I wouldn't feel good telling the fans, telling the people that come to watch my fight, yeah, he just wasn't, you know what I mean? Of course, I don't think these guys are to my level, and of course, I think I'm going to win. But the risk and the challenge of overcoming like an adversary that's a tough match is fun. I can't really explain it, but it's kind of like a. I don't want to say it's like a pride thing, but in a sense it almost is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you don't want to take the easy route. You want to show people that you went and overcome the hard stuff. Cause that's what people really care about anyways. You know, like no one talks about the guy who had a whole bunch of scrubs. He beat 100 scrubs. Then the one tough challenge that he came across, he lost, mm-hmm. You know? Of course, we have to be smart with our careers and think about the longevity of our careers, but that doesn't mean just taking the easy route out, in my opinion.
You mentioned about, you know, difficulties that, you know, are going to come in a fight. What do you think is the biggest difficulty / challenge that Brian's going to offer you?
I think he's very athletic. He's quick. I know he's a little shorter, so I think he's going to rely a lot of on his explosive movement. He's probably going to do a lot of head movement, and I believe that he's going to try to wrestle me and see if he can minimize that length that I have on him. And I know I have some power in my hands, so I think that's another thing that he's going to be thinking about. But in my opinion, you know, I think I'm the better striker, and I think I'm the better MMA grappler and the better wrestler, even though he was a state champion wrestler in high school and stuff. It's a totally different game when you get to this type of sport. You know, MMA wrestling is not the same as collegiate wrestling. And, you know, you got punches being thrown at your face. So there's a lot to think about, and damage minimization and things like that. So that's where I'm thinking how it's kind of going to go a little bit.
I mean, I know keeping your range is important in every fight, but do you kind of feel like this fight, there's a little more emphasis on it because you know what you're likely expecting from your opponent?
Honestly, not really, because I do. My fight style is kind of like, I like to pressure people. I like to get in there and beat people up and you know, exchange. That's just kind of like the way I like to fight. I doubt that that's going to change for this because it's just kind of who I am. But obviously I'm going to use every advantage that I can. And if I'm hitting him and he can't hit me, that's fine too. You know what I mean? That's perfect. So as long as, as long as it goes that way. We'll see. A fight, you know, you can plan for a fight all you want, but things happen in a fight that you can't plan for. And you kind of have to be on your feet in there, and you have to think on your feet. So it's just one of those things. Adapt.
Is that part of your training? Is getting in the room and just, okay, let's put myself in some bad situations that could come up in this fight. I mean, how much of that is in the preparations for it?
Oh, I think a lot of people do that. I mean, for me, you know, I'll put myself in those situations on my own, make sure that I can work out of them. If I'm tired, I'll tell the guy, get on my back and let's work from my back. You know, if I know that he's got a good position in the gym that I've been struggling with, I'll say, hey, let's run it again to get on there. You know what I mean? Because if I can't get out of it in the gym, then I can't get out of it in the ring. And the way I look at it is, the stuff that's hard in the gym is what you should be practicing. Those are the things that you don't want to do where you're getting your butt kicked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Those are the stuff you should be working on. And I'm always asking questions. I'm always interested in learning more and seeing how come I can't hold him down right here? And why is he getting out of it so quickly? Or why is he transitioning to this or attacking with this and it's being effective? And I kind of analyze that. And really, you know, there's a lot of thinking in MMA. People talk about it as a chess match, and it really is a chess match. The angles and the movements and the positioning, they have a purpose. They're tools. And if you know how to use the tools correctly and transition between each tool, you can be the most effective, efficient fighter. You know what I'm saying?
It makes me think of I forget who I was listening to the other day, and they were talking about MMA grappling, and they were talking about Khabib, of why Khabib is so good. They say, you know what, he just sets up so many traps for you to where if he wants to stay on the ground with you, he will, but then also he'll let you get up just because he knows he can take you right back down. And it's just these very small things that happen on how, you know, and obviously he was talking about the ground aspect of it, of how you're controlling someone's arms, how you're controlling someone's legs. I mean, and it kind of makes me think of what you're saying there with being very analytical of like, you know, putting that tape in and you pause it and you sit there and say, okay, how do I control this aspect of it?
Right. I mean, like a chess match, you have a certain amount of moves that you can play out. Okay. And if you force your opponent down to a select amount of moves that you've already calculated and already thought of, so they have three. So say now you force your opponent to these three moves that they can do, and you're prepared to whichever three that he chooses to react to that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So even in fighting, there's a correct way to get up without using a whole lot of energy and taking a whole lot of damage. You know, there's a correct way to do an armbar. There's a correct way to transition. And if you understand that and you can see what your opponent has to do for their next move, you can also time that and prepare for it. You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I totally get what you're saying. Of course, LFA, of course, now on UFC Fight Pass. This fight, Carl, will be air on Fight Pass. Obviously, a great opportunity for you. LFA debut. Get in front of the LFA people. So, as always, man, I really appreciate time. Of course, let me know anything you find on social media. And, of course, anybody else you want to shout out?
Yeah. So, you can follow me on Instagram at MichaelStack_MMA. Twitter, it's going to be just Michael Stack MMA. And, you know, I just want to shout out my team Trials and my buddy Logan Clark for helping me out with this diet. And thank you for having me on again, man. It's always a pleasure.
And there was my conversations with Modestus Moukakis, Brandon Royval, and Michael Stack. I appreciate all those fighters coming on this week's edition of the podcast to talk about their fights coming up on Friday on UFC Fight Pass. Of course, Modestus is going to be a part of Cage Warriors 111. And then
Brandon and Michael will be a part of LFA 79 on next week's edition of the show. Already got to already record the interview. You're going to hear from Ricky Simon, who's going to be a part of the UFC Fight Night card in Washington, D.C. here in a couple of weeks, as he's going to be taking on Rob Font. It's actually a fight that Ricky mentioned earlier this year that he wanted. Of course, this will be his first fight since coming off that loss against Uriah Faber. I do want to mention over right now on the MMAreport.com, you can check out some interviews that I've posted over the past couple of days. You can hear my conversation with Paul Elizondo Jr. is going to be fighting on Friday at Combat Day 50, which will be in Fresno. You can hear my conversation with Chandler Cole, who's going to be part of CFFC 80 on Friday on UFC Fight Pass. Also, talk to Eileen Villalobos. So she's coming off a win. Kind of interesting conversation I had with her where she's actually kind of created a bond with the fighter that she fought a couple weeks ago and helping her opponent out. So be sure to check that out. Also, as I mentioned, I will have an interview with James Krause later on this week. That'll be posted on the MMAreport.com. But Daniel, we do want to wrap up this week's edition of the show by talking about some of our thoughts on what we saw last week at UFC Sao Paulo and Bellator 234. Here's a little note for you on Bellator 234. Two fighters on this card have been told they need to move up in weight by Mike Mazzulli of the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations. Of course, he does regulate all of the Bellator international events, and kind of a note on that is that he will regulate the Bellator portion of the fight card in Japan coming up here at the end of the year, which, by the way, that fight card will air live on the Paramount Network on Saturday night, December the 28th, I believe it is, wherever that Saturday is, 10 p.m. each time. So that will be aired live from Japan. So it'll be Sunday afternoon in Japan. So there's a little note on that. But Mike did tell me that he has told Sydney Outlaw and Shanae Kavanaugh that they need to move up in weight. Of course, they do the fight night weights, and they were above the threshold. So both those fighters, who both got victories at Bellator 234, have been told to move up in weight. But, you know, really, Daniel, you look at Bellator 234, the surprise result is clearly Lent Vassell getting the win over Sergey Kharitonov.
Yeah, leading up to this fight card, we talked about how bad of a matchup Kharitonov was for Vassell, and look at what happened. He went out there, he took him down in the first round, took him down in the second round, went in and finished it. I mean, this was a big-time shocker with Vassell beating Kharitonov, and it was just a huge win for Lennon Vassell. I mean, I know, you know, we were on the same boat here. I mean, what were your thoughts watching Vassell pull out the win?
I didn't see this one coming. I did see it coming. Now, I will say this also. When the weigh-in results came out, I saw like, oh, Lent Vassell 260, Sergey Kharitonov 238. I asked Mike Mazzulli about that. I said, hey, Lent Vassell told me he was walking around a lot. He goes, oh, yeah, he was 238. He wasn't 260. So it was vice versa on that one. But, yeah, I did not see that one coming. And maybe it's a career resurgent for Lent Vassell at heavyweight. You know, we saw him with the first heavyweight fight, you know, earlier this year, didn't get the win. He gets the win here. I mean, look, and that's the thing in the heavyweight division, and particularly in Bellator, you're probably at two, at the most, three wins away from a title shot.
Yeah, you really are, especially if you have a track record. So Vassell looks good here. I mean, this whole Bellator 234 card, to me, a couple things. One, Sydney Outlaw, Roger Huerta sucked. I'm surprised Outlaw didn't lose all that weight, getting all the exercise, you know, running around, dancing around the octagon against Roger Huerta. Man, that fight sucked. Now, the story of Bellator 234 for me was the Ghazalis. The father, Chaim Ghazali, retiring with the win over Arthur Cronin. That was a beautiful moment. And his son, Aviv Ghazali, at lightweight, looked phenomenal getting that anaconda choke. And it looks like he's going to call out everyone who's beaten his father. And I am here for this. So Aviv Ghazali is a name to watch in the lightweight division.
Yeah, you know, and also, you know, Austin Manafort getting a win is the other kind of notable note in terms of Bellator 234. UFC Sao Paulo, not the most entertaining event, if we're just being honest about it. Main event. Do we be nice here, Daniel?
Yeah, this fight sucked. I mean, this fight was awful.
Look, I started watching this event right before the James Krause fight. talking live. And by the time the main event got there, about the third round, I'm kind of tired. And I'm just going, do I watch the final two rounds or do I just go to bed? Because I felt like nothing's going to change.
Yeah. What a devastating fight for Shaka Ray. So it was like a legend in the sport, a guy who needs victories, needed a big victory in this light heavyweight fight. And this was a really inactive, cautious fight. And this really impacts where he is in light heavyweight division. He on my scorecards, I thought he won this fight 3-2. I thought he won the first three rounds. But I don't care because this fight itself was awful. Mm-hmm. It was boring. And it's just one of those fights where if you're watching it, you're turning it off. And for Jacare, right, this was a very important fight for him to win. And now he continues to slide down the rankings. And for it to be a fight like this, it's just awful for Jacare. And for Jan Błachowicz, he beat Jacare Souza. But this is the type of win that's going to look a lot better in hindsight when there's distance between this fight. When people don't really remember what happened, they just look at the result. They're like, oh, he beat Jacare. Good job. I mean, this fight sucked.
When he called for a title shot, I started laughing.
Yeah. After a fight like that, the only thing you need to do is shut up.
Yeah. Like it's very clear now. It just because I have to believe – you know, because I kind of felt like, you know, the world tour continued last weekend of who's John Jones going to fight next in terms of these light heavyweight bouts. And clearly, I think Jan Błachowicz just took himself out of the conversation with that performance. Yeah. You know, so then it becomes Dom Reyes and Corey Anderson. I think it's going to be Dom Reyes. And my guess would be is then we're going to see a rematch between Corey Anderson and Jan Błachowicz. Of course, they fought back at UFC 191, a decision win there. For Corey Anderson, but not the greatest fight. We talked about the Shogun Paul Craig fight earlier. Charles Oliveira, a nice win against Jared Gordon. The call out of Conor McGregor, gotta be realistic with your call outs, man. Conor McGregor is not coming back to the UFC to fight Charles Oliveira. Sorry, Charles. Love your fighting. Love watching you fight. Conor ain't coming back to fight you, bro.
If you're not main eventing an ESPN Plus card, you probably aren't getting a fight with Conor McGregor. And that's the case of Charles Oliveira. Jesus. Yeah. Great win over Jared Gordon. Uppercut knockout. But yeah, heck no. I mean, this fight card was pretty average, but there was quite a few nice moments. You mentioned Oliveira. I mean, James Krause, so you've interviewed, just a brutal win over Sergio Moraes. I mean, dominant round two. Finishes him in round three. I mean, James Krause is so talented. In the featherweight division, Ricardo Ramos, easy win, submission victory, first round victory. And then a couple other fights is like that stuck out to me, Jason. Randy Brown's win over Worley Alves off his back, locking on the triangle choke. Big time win for him, and Alves probably has to be shaking his head. And then Henan Burrell. I mean, he's out of the UFC, right? Like, he lost a decision to Douglas Andrade. Andrade is pretty talented. Burrell looked halfway decent in round two, but rounds one and three were all Andrade.
Let me ask you about this Charles Oliveira comment about Khabib Nurmagomedov. He goes, quote, everyone's talking about Khabib. I'm better than him standing up. If it goes to the ground, I'm not going to be afraid of him.
I believe that he won't be afraid of him.
Until Khabib mauls him?
Yeah. Well, he won't be afraid. He'll just be very upset.
Josh Thompson was talking about Khabib the other day, and he was talking about, he's like, look, he goes, his elbows are vicious. And he goes, I can't tell you how many times he's cut me with his elbows, just in sparring. He's like, those elbows are vicious. You know, but look, when it comes to Khabib, there's only one fight I want to see with Khabib right now. It's Tony Ferguson. Yeah. Even though after Tony, Justin Gaethje is kind of an interesting fight for Khabib.
Yeah, I think that one is interesting.
But if that fight ever happens, I don't think we see the reckless Justin Gaethje that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd be on the defense of a takedown.
I think for sure we would see Justin Gaethje have a much more different tactical approach because a lot of times he knows what he's getting into. He's like, all right, guys, we're both doing a firefight. But he knows Nurmagomedov does not care about firefights, so he may have a different approach there.
The other thing is, man, Henan Burrell. Remember when this guy was called the best fighter in the world?
Yeah, man, and he was at that time, but...
Well, he won 30... What was it? He had a 33 fight unbeaten streak, and then he's, lost now five in a row?
Yeah.
I think he hasn't won since Dana White called him the best fighter, best pound-for-pound fighter.
It's the ultimate jinx. We should do a list of the ultimate Dana White jinxes. Because he's absolutely
God, that makes me think of
and I
Felipe Nover. When Dana was Dana White, he's the next Anderson Silva, whatever it was.
Yeah, that's the last guy Burrell beat, actually.
Oh, man. Yeah, you talk about since he lost to TJ Dillashaw at UFC 173, he has 2 wins and 7 losses.
He has 8 losses. Oh, wait, no, 7 losses. You're right. I'm bad at math.
Eight if you count the TJ loss.
Yeah. But you're right. And that was 2014, and his 2 wins are over. Felipe Nover and Mitch Gagnon. Yeah, man. That's a wrap for Burrell. He had a hell of a run. But it's a wrap for Burrell.
I wonder if Bellator brings him in.
Who knows, man? He is a former bantamweight champion. He defended his title several times in the UFC, but he looks not good. But I think maybe, for sure, somebody will pick him up.
Yeah, I mean, someone's going to give him an opportunity. I wonder if Bellator tries to bring him in and maybe try to utilize him to up the stock of a younger fighter there. UFC Sao Paulo is not an event that you're going to sit there 6 months from now and go, hey, let me go on my ESPN Plus account and watch that fight card back.
No, especially the main event. No, literally zero people will watch that on replay. No one's watching that fight a second time.
Yeah. As I mentioned, we got 2 weeks to our next UFC event, but we do have a Bellator event on Saturday. It will air live on the Bellator app on Saturday afternoon. Main card, I want to say, is going to be 5 p.m. Eastern time. Michael Page going to take on Giovanni Melaleo, who is stepping up here on short notice. That fight does not draw me to the Bellator app on Saturday, just being honest. The fight that does draw me to the Bellator app, and the fight that interests me the most on that fight card, is the co-main event of Fabian Edwards and Mike Shipman. Fabian Edwards seems to be the real deal. Now, he's the younger brother of Leon Edwards. He's undefeated. He's looked great in Bellator. It's been a great signing for Bellator. Mike Shipman, a quality middleweight, record of 13-2. To me, if you're going to watch any one fight from the Bellator card on Saturday, it is Fabian Edwards versus Mike Shipman.
Noted. Yeah, this is a fight card where just a lot of local talent and a lot of prospects. So Edwards Shipman, that's the fight to watch. Michael Page, I mean, it's a showcase fight. I mean, it was supposed to be Page and Anderson, but unfortunately, we couldn't get that because injury. And Page will get that showcase fight, but Edwards Shipman, that's the one to watch in London.
Oh, I was interested in that MVP Derek Anderson fight. That was, to me, was a fight that, yeah, that would have sat there and got me interested. There was, did you see the tweet the Bellator had a couple days, like last week, about promoting Michael Page?
No, what was it?
So it's a video where they're showing him, beating up David Rickles, and the caption was, "Watch MVP, his road to avenge his loss." I'm like, the loss is against Douglas Lima. It wasn't against who he's fighting.
Yeah.
Like, I almost feel like Bellator did that on purpose to get people talking about it.
Yeah. 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 No comment. I feel like there's no way they're thinking that far ahead. I think they just messed up, man. It's just a banana peel slip.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, I mean, the thing with it is, with Michael Page is he's just one of those guys that I really wonder, when you talk about the elite of the Bellator welterweight division, can he beat them?
I think for most of them, I'm not picking Michael Page, but he's still a pretty talented fighter. But at this moment, I don't look at Michael Page as one of the elite welterweight fighters in Bellator.
Like, look, we've seen him against Douglas Lima. I don't really see that fight going differently. I was there for the Paul Daly fight. God, that fight sucked. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. That fight was awful. Like, when you think about the top welterweights in Bellator, as I'm kind of scrolling down, if it's him versus John Fitch, how's it go?
I look, John Fitch has a clear path to victory, even though I think Michael Page will win that fight for sure.
Neiman Gracie.
Yeah, I think Page will win that fight. But again, these guys have a clear path to victory where there's a big hole in Page's game they can take advantage of.
Andrei Kereshkov.
Yeah, Kereshkov will be my pick big time.
Lorenz Larkin.
Larkin, slightly, but it's a tough one.
Rory McDonald.
Rory.
Let me see if there's anybody else here that comes up as I'm going through the Bellator website. Ed Roof.
Ooh, I guess I'd go with Paige, but again, these wrestler grappler types can just eliminate that and pull off the win.
One other name, Logan Storley.
It's a tough one, and I like Storley a lot. I think Paige would be the favorite in that fight, though.
The problem is, I think with like a guy like Logan, what happens if he can't get the fight to the ground?
Yeah, exactly. Or if it gets back up to the feet.
Yeah, that would be my question mark with them. You know, here's a fighter I could see Bellator putting up against Michael Page. Bobby Volecker.
Yeah, a veteran of the sport who isn't particularly dangerous, who's proves good, but he's not. There's a good chance Page beats him.
Yeah, that's the type of fight I could see. And Bobby is under contract with Bellator, as he's one of those Shamrock champions that was awarded a Bellator contract, and he did accept that contract. So, not a ton of things going on in the world of MMA this weekend, but obviously we'll be paying attention to everything that is going on. As I mentioned, on next week's edition of the show, we will talk about Ricky Simon. Of course, that'll be a Thanksgiving Eve edition of the show. It's crazy. Thanksgiving's already here, Daniel.
Like, I know, I'm already hungry.
I was sitting there and my mom's like, so what time you come over on Thanksgiving? I'm like, when's Thanksgiving? It's next week. Oh,
it's scary.
Dude, when it's football season, I'm like a week to week guy. It's like, okay, where am I at this weekend? I'm in Atlanta this weekend. Okay. I'm worried about going to Atlanta this weekend. I mean, it's like this time of year, it's like I'm a week to week.
Yeah. Week to week. You just tunnel vision.
Like the crazy thing is, like, someone say, hey, where are the Bucks playing 3 weeks? I'm like, I know where we are the next 2 weeks. I know who we're playing the next 2 weeks. I know we're home in 3 weeks. Couldn't tell you who the opponent is.
Yeah,
I know I'm in Atlanta this weekend. And I'm in Jacksonville the following weekend.
You can't think too far ahead.
No, I know. I'm a one week at a time type of guy. Yeah, it's but yeah, man, Thanksgiving's already here, man. Before you know, it's going to be Christmas, man. This year is just flying by, but yeah, we'll be back next week. I'm sure there'll be something that'll happen in MMA that'll give us something to talk about. Of course, I do want to thank Modestus Bukauskas, Brandon Royval, and Michael Stack for coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, be sure to rate, review, subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Google Podcasts, also available on RadioInfluence.com, TheMMAReport.com. If there's any other podcasting platforms you want to hear this show on, just shoot me an email, Jason at RadioInfluence.com, and I will get the podcast on that platform. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out RadioInfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.